chapter 7, verse 24, of the Bhagavad Gita, with your moderator, Dr. Anil Mehta.
We'll go to verse number 24. Chapter 7, verse number 24.
Avyaktam vyaktimapannam manyante mama buddhayah param bhavama janantah mamavyayamanuttamam.
Now he talks about who he is. Who is this Lord? So he says, avyaktam. I am unmanifest. We'll talk about what is manifest and unmanifest, but he says, I am unmanifest. Vyaktim. Vyaktim means manifest. Apannam. So, unmanifest has become manifest. Vyaktim is manifest. Apannam means has become manifest. Manyante. Manyante means they think. They think mam. The Lord says, abuddhaya, the unwise. Abuddhaya, the foolish people. Buddhaya means one who has buddhi, who is very smart. Abuddhaya means one who is not so smart. The unwise people think of me, the unmanifest, as having become manifest. And in that process, param bhavam ajanantaha. Ajanantaha means no. Ajanantaha means they do not know param bhavam, my higher nature. They do not know me as the highest. Mama. Mama means my nature as what? Avyayam anuttamam. Avyayam means immutable, unchanging, unaffected by all situations. And anuttamam. Uttamam means higher. Anuttamam means there is nothing higher than me. So these people think me, the unmanifest Lord, to have become manifest. And then in that process, they do not recognize my higher nature as the unmanifest, all-pervading, highest permanent reality. Now this unmanifest becoming manifest. Now what is the difference between manifest and unmanifest? Manifest means whatever I am aware of is manifest. Whatever I am aware of is manifest. So with my body, I can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. So whatever I can see, hear, smell, taste, touch is manifest. With the mind, whatever emotions I feel, joy, sorrow, anger, hatred, jealousy, greed, compassion, love, they're all manifest. Yeah, like my emotions may not be manifest to you, but each one of us is aware of their own emotions. Now I am happy, now I am unhappy, now I am angry. So all emotions are also manifest to us. Then ideas, all concepts. The idea that gravity, you know, there is a force called gravity that when something is thrown from the top, it falls down at 32 feet per second or whatever that is. Now that power is known to us. Yeah, we may not see the power of gravity, but yeah, if you throw a stone, it will fall. So whatever I can see, whatever I can feel, whatever I can conceptualize, anything that I can see, feel or conceptualize is called manifest. All my desires are manifest to me, you know. So everything below this chart is all manifest, including my own ego. I'm aware that I am this individual, I'm separate from him and her and all that. So whatever I'm aware of is manifest. And what is unmanifest? Unmanifest is none of these. It is that consciousness which at this moment we are not aware of. God is not somebody you can see, you cannot taste him, you cannot smell him, you cannot touch him, you cannot feel him with your emotions. You cannot even conceptualize him, even though all the scriptures describe him. But they say none of the scriptures can describe him. They can only indicate. We have been talked about before, like my finger, there is a beautiful moon. My finger can point to the moon, but my finger is not the moon. When my finger can say, oh, look in that direction, there is the beautiful moon rising, the crescent moon. So the scriptures are like that finger that can point to that reality, but cannot, are not themselves the reality. So that is what he's saying, that words cannot describe him, mind cannot conceptualize him. That is what the Lord is. So he says, I am unmanifest, I am not known to everybody, but out of his kindness, out of his compassion, he appears in front of us. Because why? Because it is very hard to love a God who is unmanifest, you know, unmanifest. I cannot even think about him, I cannot know him, I cannot feel him, I cannot see him, touch him. So he appears. He appears as Krishna, or he appears as Ram, or he appears as Jesus. Because it is then easy, when I see Jesus on the cross, or when I see Krishna playing the flute, or when I see Ram with his bow and arrow, I develop an attitude of love. And they say that it is easy to love the form, but it is difficult to love the all-pervading formless. And so in his infinite mercy and compassion, he has given us a form, but through the form, you should see the all-pervading God. And that is why, you know, some people say idol worship is good or idol worship is bad. Idol is nothing but representing the ideal. I think last week also we had heard about that. The idol represents the ideal. Just as if you have a picture of your grandfather is no more, but when you see the picture, you develop so much love. You know, this was my grandfather. When I was a child, I used to play in his lap. And so you develop this feeling of love. And the grandfather is no more, he's become unmanifest, but that picture is the representative. So similarly, idol represents the ideal. And that's why there is no harm in loving an idol, but one should not restrict oneself to loving the idol. Because then if you say that, oh, Krishna alone is God and everybody else is useless, or Jesus is the only way and everybody else will go to hell, then what you're doing is you're limiting God, that he's only in that form of Jesus, only in that form of Krishna or Shiva. And then you become fanatical. You know, then you go destroying others' temples and others' churches and killing people and forcibly trying to convert them. So fanaticism comes when you limit yourself. But there is no harm. It's like, I love this particular form of God, and there is nothing wrong with that. When I see the form of Shiva sitting in meditation, I feel, you know, that is God. And there's nothing wrong with that. But somebody who loves Krishna, or somebody who loves Jesus or Muhammad, or somebody who loves no form, you know, like Buddha said, you know, do not worship anybody with form. And that is fine too. So the idea is that one should not become fanatical, and remember that the unmanifest Lord has become manifest in that idol. And through worshipping that idol, that's why in the temple when we establish the idol, we do Pratishthapna, what is they called? You establish the murti and you chant certain mantras. So what you are doing, you are invoking that heavenly power into that idol. And that is why they have at least several days of ceremonies when they build a new temple, so that the Lord's power may be invoked. That idol is nothing but a piece of stone made by man. You know, somebody in Jaipur sat down and made that marble, and it has no intrinsic power of its own, but through that chanting of the mantras, you're invoking the Lord's presence. So that is what they're saying. Do not think that that idol is God, but the idol represents God. And have love for that, but then go beyond that to the all-pervading reality that is also in my heart. Of course, some people say, I only want to love God as, you know, as separate, like Mirabai or like Tukaram, which is fine too. You want to love him as me and he are separate, which is fine too, but as long as you don't become fanatical. The attitude of love is wonderful, but it should be total undivided love, and at the same time respecting other people's. So that is one meaning of this unmanifest and manifest. Another meaning that can come out of that is that people think, you know, Krishna was just an ordinary human being. You know, he was not God. Or Ram was just a human being, or Christ was just an ordinary mortal, or Buddha was. The idea is that these people are incarnation. They are called avatar. That's why Ram and Krishna and all are called as avatar, where the Lord himself has manifested in that form. And for us, he has appeared and gone through all the sufferings. You know, we see them walking on this earth and being, you know, disgraced and mistreated and crucified and hurt. And Ram was sent to the forest for 14 years. So all the suffering they undergo like us. And so sometimes you may say, they were ordinary human beings like us. They walked and talked like us. They thought like us. But Krishna says, do not consider me as an ordinary human being. I am a manifestation of that supreme reality. And in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when we come to, you will see that he showed Arjuna his Virat Swarup, you know, his form, where in that body of Krishna, Arjuna could see the entire universe. He was amazed. He could see the entire universe, all the heavens and the earth and all the creatures on the earth. Not only that, but the past, present and future. Everything he could see in that one form. So the idea is that do not consider me as just an ordinary human being. I am that infinite mortal. Immortal, you know, immortal essence who has appeared on this earth to educate us, to guide us, to inspire us. The third meaning of unmanifest and manifest, that I also was listening to Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, he says that we consider this manifest world as real. You know, this chair is real, this floor is real, these walls are real, my body is real. But God we consider as, I don't know where he is, you know, whether he exists or not. There was a cover story in Time magazine a few years ago where they said, is God dead? That was the heading of that. That we think that God is somewhere far away, I cannot see him, I don't even know if he exists. If he does, it's okay, you know, he's there, let me do my thing. And we get so caught up in the manifest things that we give so much reality to the world that we forget that there is a reality which is supporting all this universe. And this whole world is just an appearance. It is a temporary appearance upon that permanent reality, upon that permanent consciousness. And do not only look at this world as a world, but look at it as the Lord appearing in different forms and taking on different. But in fact, in reality, this world is just a play, it's just an illusion. There is a substratum. And once you wake up to that reality, then for such an individual, this world does not appear too much importance. Does not give too much importance to this world once he has woken up to that reality. So he says, abuddhaya, foolish people, think of me as an ordinary human being, or think of this manifest world as real and me as unreal. But in fact, I am the substratum which supports this whole universe. And param bhavam ajanantaha, and they do not know me as the supreme power, as the supreme support, which is unchanging. While this whole world has come into creation, the Lord himself has remained unchanged. This world is just an abhas, is an appearance upon that Lord. But in fact, nothing happens to him. Even when the world was created, the Lord was the same. Even before the world was created, he was the same. The world is an appearance. Just look at it as that. But remember that there is a support. And for that, one has to have Shraddha. Faith is very, very important. We have talked about that on before. Shraddha is not only blind faith, but faith with understanding. And faith in the Lord, faith in the scriptures, faith in the Guru, and then faith in myself. These four are very important. The faith that there is an almighty God, the scriptures take us to him, gurus like Swami Chinmayananda who interpreted the scriptures, and then faith in my ability to reach God is very, very important. And we find that faith is a very powerful tool that they say, you know, faith can move mountains. Because unless you have faith, you cannot get spiritual knowledge. In the Gita, it says in one place, the Lord says, to obtain knowledge, you have to have faith. You have to have faith in the scriptures. You have to have faith in the teacher. And we find that in the world, we have faith in all kinds of things. Like, if I get into a plane, now I have faith that American Airlines has tested this plane, that all the instruments are working correctly. The engineer who came and checked the instruments knew what he was doing. The pilot who is going to pilot the plane is not drunk, and he has had 8 hours of sleep. You know, he wasn't up till 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning partying, and he won't fall asleep while he's driving. So we have faith, you know, when we get onto the plane, even though this plane is taking me in the air, but I have faith that the plane will land. Or when I go to the supermarket, you know, I buy all these big groceries, big bag, and I give him two little pieces of paper that has two little green pieces of paper, $20 bills, which has, you know, the US currency on it. Now that grocer can say, these are two pieces of paper, you're taking all this grocery and giving me two worthless pieces of paper? No, he takes those $40. Why? Because he has faith that this is backed by the United States government. I can take it to the bank and I can get $40. So we have faith in that worthless piece of paper. Why? Because it is backed by the US government. We have faith in the plane. In fact, talking about faith, there is a very, very beautiful story about Buddha's life. Buddha used to preach in the northern India, in UP area, in that area, Gaya and all those places. And one day he was traveling, and he used to go from village to village and have some of his followers, and then he would be preaching and telling people, you know, you are pursuing this path of just sense pleasures, you know, control your senses and pick up my eightfold path. And he had this eightfold path of spiritual improvement, and you will reach that state of nirvana, the state of bliss, which is the eternal bliss, which is your true nature. And so one villager came up to him and said, you know, Lord, you know, what you're saying makes sense, but this eightfold path is so difficult. It is so hard to live right conduct and right behavior and right attitude and right thinking. I think it's very difficult. And then how do we know that there is really a nirvana that you're talking about? You know, how do we know that? When they didn't know Buddha, Buddha just appeared from somewhere. Maybe you are bluffing us. And we are going to put all this effort, and you say, give up all your other, you know, fun and joy and all, and take to my path, and then you will get this supreme joy. I'm not so sure, and I don't have faith in that. So Buddha says, okay, you don't have faith. Okay, now, are there mountains called Himalayas? He says, yeah, there are mountains about 200 miles north of here called Himalayas. And in those days, people didn't travel much. You know, they only had to go by foot or by bullock cart. So it was not like now where you have internet and you can see the Himalayas right away. No telephones, cell phones, none of that. So he says, have you seen the Himalayas? He says, no, it's 200 miles away. It's too far. I can't go there. He said, how do you know that there are mountains called Himalayas? He said, well, my father told me. He says, did your father see them? No. His father told him. How did his father find out? His father's uncle had actually traveled to the Himalayas. He had walked the 200 miles and taken a year. By the time he went to the Himalayas, he saw the mountains, he went on a pilgrimage, went to all the holy places, and a year later he came back and he told my grandfather that there are these beautiful peaks called the Himalayas from where the rivers come, and which is a very holy place. So he says, but Buddha says, but maybe your grandfather's uncle, maybe he bluffed, maybe he told all lies, maybe there is no such thing as Himalayas. He said, no. My grandfather used to tell me that this uncle was a very holy person, very spiritual, very nice, and he would never lie. And he said that he had gone to the Himalayas and seen the beauty, and that's why I believe it. Because my grandfather told me that his uncle was a very good person. So he says, you believe this great grand uncle whom you have never seen because of hearsay. You heard from your father and from your grandfather. But I am standing here in flesh in front of you and telling you that there is a state called nirvana which you can reach. And so that is what is faith, that when you see a saint or when you see the teacher and when you see the scriptures, then have faith. Yeah, there is a state called God, there is a state called divinity, state called nirvana. And the scriptures tell us about it, the saints tell us about it. And I have to have faith in that, because without faith, nothing can happen. No progress can happen. So, again, we're not saying that you should have blind faith. Just blindly just believe everything 100% and take it and not even deviate a word. You listen to it with devotion, with attention, and then apply that in your life. That if the Gita says that this is how you should live your life, start applying that. And when you see the benefit of that, then that is called faith accompanied by knowledge. Do not blindly accept, even if the Jesus says it, even if Krishna says it, even if Buddha says it, but think about it and say that, is this knowledge something that will benefit me? That's why in our spiritual study, there are three steps. Shravan, Mananam, and Nididhyasan. So Shravan is called listening. Shravanam is listening. You listen to the scriptures, you read the scriptures, you try to understand them. That is called Shravan. You listen to the teacher. Then Mananam. Mananam is the second step where you go home and think about it. That is this thing really true? Is this something that will help me? Is it beneficial in my life? Is it something I can apply? So, you as if you churn it, just as when you churn the milk, how the butter comes out. So similarly, you churn this knowledge and wisdom comes when you have thought about it. So this, whatever we listen today, whatever we have read, we should all go home and reread it and think about it. That is it something that is useful? Is it something that is valid? Do not just go and put the book in the corner, but reread it and think about it. And the third one is Nididhyasam. Start applying that in your life. Once you apply that in your life, then you will see, yes, whatever the Gita says, it is true. It is helping me. So when I apply the knowledge of the Gita, when I do karma yoga service, when I do bhakti, when I do meditation, when I do all this, how it helps me to become a better individual. So then he says, then that knowledge becomes firm. Then nobody can shake that person. So that's what he says. Do not think of the Lord as being something that is somewhere out there, but it is my own true nature. And it is that substratum, that permanent reality. And with that faith, when you approach him, then you will see that that Lord himself has become manifest, has appeared in the idol. He's there in the saints, he's there in the prophets, he's there in the avatars, the manifestations. So that is the essence of this beautiful shloka.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.
Thank you.